You're listening to the ISF Podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. In today's episode, Steve speaks with Christopher Tito Sestito, Chairman of the Board, CEO, and co-founder of Hidden Layer, a cybersecurity startup dedicated to preventing adversarial machine learning attacks. Tito shares his perspective on where the business world is currently when it comes to AI and cybersecurity. He also gives his thoughts on the state of AI regulation and what business leaders should do to protect their organizations in the age of AI.
So, Tito, it's great to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Steve. Happy to be here.
Great. Now, you're one of the co-founders of Hidden Layer, which is a cybersecurity company started 2019, if I remember correctly. And what you do is really look at preventing adversarial machine learning attacks, something that is becoming hugely important and, of course, relevant today. So just to get us started, can you give us a little bit of background as to how you came to start up Hidden Layer? What was the real driver behind that?
Yeah, absolutely. I wish I could tell you it was a stroke of genius by the three of us. But in reality, we were just victims of an adversarial AI attack, one of the first that ever happened in the wild. We worked at a company called Cylance, which was really a next-gen antivirus company that was using artificial intelligence to sort of replace the old signature-based detection antivirus that had been kind of the status quo for a long time. And the reason that's relevant is back in 2019, we had a machine learning model that was part of our Windows product, and some threat actors actually downloaded that from a free trial of that solution and then performed one of the world's first adversarial inference attacks on that model. And, you know, we didn't even have names for it at the time, but essentially they were able to submit adversarial samples to that model and then reverse it completely. They were able to build a copy of it offline. Then they were selling that on the dark web. They were testing bypasses offline and then bringing it online and conducting against our customers. So it was highly consequential. And it was really a moment that woke us up to really how vulnerable artificial intelligence is. Jim Tanner and I, the co-founders of Hidden Layer today, now we're charged with the response to that. And, you know, we spent about 4 months straight just trying to put that fire out. And that really showed us these models. They're, you know, you want your customers, you want the public to interact with them as users of the models, but that makes them just as available to threat actors. And so it was ultimately just a big wake-up call to us. And we learned, look, these models, they're vulnerable at runtime during that interaction period, but they're also extremely vulnerable as an artifact itself. When you think about things like, if you just think about like a Microsoft file, we've got 30 years plus of security built into that. If you have a Microsoft portable executable file, we sign them. We have very strict permissions where you can read, write, and execute. We have import declarations of different code you're importing. We have security versioning information. We have all sorts of these mechanisms to secure it. But models, they're still executable files, and we have none of that. It's really the Wild West as far as that goes. So that's leading to situations where threat actors are using them as vehicles to deliver malware. So really, there's supply chain issues. There's runtime issues. There's all sorts of needs. Really, every need that you have within cybersecurity for any other entity still applies to artificial intelligence. And that's what really gave us the drive and the need to form Hidden Layer.
And that, as we say, was, well, almost 6 years ago now. So where are we today when it comes to how secure AI is from cyber intrusions and attacks? Do you think, have we learned anything over those past few years?
From the vendor perspective, outside of artificial intelligence, I think we've learned a lot. I think the challenge at the AI level is how fast we've moved. So even if we are learning, AI is traveling so quickly in terms of its progression. I mean, that time that we formed the company in 2022, and that was still about 6 months before ChatGPT and pivoting into generative AI solutions. And so every week or two, there's a new leader in terms of models. We've had a rise of other players in the space like DeepSeek. We've had the proliferation of smaller models that are now available and small enough to put inside of applications. There's been so many advancements that if you don't have a dedicated organization looking at this, it's really just moving too quickly to ultimately have things at a sort of hardening level at the model layer itself. So we've learned quite a bit, but the space is moving so quickly that it really does require sort of a dedicated look at how to secure these assets. And even then, it becomes a little bit of a challenge. But I think there is general awareness to a lot of things at sort of a categorical level. So when you look at things like prompt injection, I think the population is becoming more aware of that. then it can get a little bit more sophisticated, like indirect prompt injection. There's like bypasses for model refusals. There's all sorts of additional like tool abuse, tool faking. There's so many different techniques here that are not really at the forefront of users of these models that is kind of creating a little bit of a dangerous situation today. So we're learning, we've progressed, you know, to answer your question directly, but we're way behind the eight ball as compared to other assets in cybersecurity that we secure.
And how do you position this within the overall cybersecurity landscape? What I'm really trying to get at here is this something that people sort of listen to you and go, wow, hadn't really thought about that, but how am I going to fit it into everything else that I'm doing? Or is it, yeah, you know, this is right up there at the top of the list when I'm thinking about how I can involve AI machine learning models into my development cycle and my cybersecurity defenses? Where are we at from that stage of maturity, from the user, if you like, perspective?
Yeah, about a year ago, I would have said the former, but today it's very much the latter. I think that we're at a point now where boards are really charging chief security officers with the security of their AI assets. And so I think there's such a drive for these organizations to say, hey, let's have a very robust generative AI strategy. The conversation around securing that is starting to become pretty common at the highest level in these enterprise organizations and government agencies. And so, you know, when we formed the company, it was very much like, let's educate, let's let everybody know that this is going to become an issue. And then fast forward a couple of years to today, when you go to a CISO conference, the top three conversations are, how do I secure AI? How are the bad guys using AI against me? How do I leverage AI to be even more effective? So it's very much at the top of mind for organizations. We're starting to see AI security teams pop up at large, definitely in the heavily regulated industries, but that's becoming a broader sort of need for organizations on the blue team side. And then as fast as AI is progressing, so is sort of the need for the security layer and other foundational layers associated with artificial intelligence. So I think it is moving pretty quickly. I don't think that we're quite caught up, but at the same time, I think it's certainly at the top of the enterprise, a major focus now. And we're starting to see budgets for securing artificial intelligence become part of the plan. So it's very, very much an area that we are seeing progress.
That's got to be good news, right? Because one of the things we've always talked about in the industry for many, many years is the fact that perhaps people at the top of the organization don't quite understand it, don't quite fund these things. And certainly from my perspective, you know, when I look at the way in which AI is generally being adopted across multiple industries all around the world, if you don't have that particular light shining on the security component of it, then you really are just setting up problems for tomorrow. One of the things I wanted to ask you is just to sort of flip it around a little bit, because we've talked about AI and perhaps, you know, the vulnerable state, so people attacking it. But let's look at it from the other perspective. How much can we actually rely on AI to protect us from cyber attacks? Because there's two sides to this, as you pointed out.
Yeah, it's an extremely important point. I think it's one that not only can we rely on it, I think we absolutely have to engage artificial intelligence techniques in any of our proactive security means. And I think that that's the best way to answer that is sort of say security isn't immune like any other sort of technology that is being applied to any production system today. We should be leveraging artificial intelligence as well. And we very much are. So, for example, just to use Hidden Layer, you know, we use artificial intelligence identifying threats to AI. So it really becomes sort of a cyclical AI securing artificial intelligence scenario. But I mean, if you look at the broader cybersecurity scope, we start seeing a lot of SOC workflows that are now becoming AI powered. Artificial intelligence is being used to do things like separate noise from true signal with things like SIM workflows when we start looking at how we're securing an organization. So as I kind of referenced earlier, antivirus companies now using artificial intelligence to be even more accurate with their convictions. So it's already sort of happening. It needs to continue at a significant pace. But in cyber, we've been kind of early adopters of artificial intelligence. And I think that that's really worked pretty well for us. And now that we see sort of a pivot into Gen AI, we're using it for things like assessing and providing summaries of incidents. We're using it for things like analysis of threats and attribution. I think we're doing a pretty good job there. And I think that that needs to continue to progress in order to be effective, because the bad guys are certainly using it and they're leveraging it to do things like create threats, to obfuscate threats. You know, really, it's the same set of threat actors. We're still looking at those same advanced persistent threat groups that are leveraging this tool, but it's allowing them to be more effective and efficient in order to conduct these attacks. And so we absolutely need to make sure that we're embracing it for the defensive side. And it really does unlock a lot that are beyond human capabilities when it comes to just the large level of data that needs to be analyzed in these defensive workflows.
Tell us a little bit more about that, because one of the challenges I think that a lot of people I talk to in the cybersecurity space face when we talk about AI is there is a degree of fear not so much as to what AI can do, but perhaps the human impact it's going to have in terms of, you know, putting people out of jobs. Then you get the other camp that says, well, actually pretty short on resources anyway. So if we could figure out some way in which we could work more collaboratively, AI doing what it's good at, people doing what they're good at, could be a bit of a solution. So help me out in that area, if anybody listening to this who's a little bit concerned about some of the things we've just been talking about.
You know, I wish I was giving a heavily positive message there. I think I'm a bit of a realist when it comes to artificial intelligence coming in. I think we are viewing a very fundamental shift in ultimately what's going to affect workforces and skill sets required. I think that if I was entering the workforce right now, I'd be focusing heavily on the effects of artificial intelligence, how I can leverage artificial intelligence. It'll no doubt be a multiplier on efficiencies for a lot of those who are in these positions. But I also predict that we're going to see a significant reduction from some of these large enterprise organizations that are going to leverage artificial intelligence. I don't think they're shouting that at the rooftops right now in terms of that being part of their plans. But I do think that that's the reality that we're up against. I think that the opportunities that it creates now is for those who can leverage artificial intelligence, whether it's a, like an engineer work for shipping code or whether it's a security operator's workflow for being able to analyze more at once, being able to leverage those solutions to move forward. The good news is it has upper limitations that do not outperform human beings. So when you look at artificial intelligence's ability to do things in large quantities that are, and even reasoning models are getting really good at that level here. But when it comes to anything on the creativity side, when it comes to looking at anything new, remembering these LLMs are really just generalizing what they've seen in the past. So when we see new threats arising, when we see sort of new applications or new sort of scenarios for a victim, that's still going to require that level of sort of human interaction. And generally speaking, I don't think the trust is there at the board level to not have a human in the loop. That's a good, accurate scenario in terms of what's really going on here, because these models, they do hallucinate. They do sort of overgeneralize, undergeneralize. They have some issues that do really require that expert level fit. I think there's certainly interest levels because humans make mistakes too. And when you actually compare those apples to apples, there's a lot of examples where models are outperforming humans, but that really comes in sort of like a large data scenario. Whereas you're looking at case by case basis is, you know, we should expect a shift. We should be really aware of what this technology means for us, but both sides have good arguments. But I think it's important to be realistic here when it comes down to how organizations are going to leverage this technology and what they're going to use it for. And I expect a reduction in workforce.
Right. And of course, we always have to bear in mind, don't we, that whilst we're talking here about the good guys and how we're going to make best use of it, the bad guys are probably still slightly ahead and will remain slightly ahead of where we're at. So we're always going to be playing this adversarial game, if I could put it that way. And the key to that, of course, for most organizations is to focus on resilience, not about if things go wrong, but when things go wrong. What are some of the most important things for people to consider when building cyber resilience in today's threat landscape in conjunction with all the prevalence we've now been talking about of AI?
Yeah, I think the important thing to remember here is we're not reinventing the wheel. We are form-fitting the same strategies we've been leveraging to artificial intelligence as well. So when I'm talking to chief security officers, you know, I'm telling them, hey, I'm not asking you to make any new decisions here. I'm asking you to apply decisions you've already made to the artificial intelligence space that your organization is investing into. And so that means that same defense in depth strategy. That means looking at the supply chain issues. That means the artifact itself, the code base itself. And then it means moving into the behavioral side where you look at sort of what are these models plugged into? What do they have the ability to affect? Who's accessing them? How are they interacting with them? How are they using it? And then moving into things like, you know, your posture management overall, where are these models coming in from? Who has access to them? Should that be controlled by roles? Should that be controlled by individuals? What impact does all these assets have across my organization? All the way into testing. Should I be actively attacking these models first and red teaming them so that that way I can ultimately understand what's going to happen and tune my security solutions to that ahead of time? And so none of what I just mentioned is new. It's really just those same workflows and those same sort of commitments that we've made on the cybersecurity side that need to be applied to the artificial intelligence space. So all the way up to regulation. At Hidden Layer, we're spending a lot of time interacting with lawmakers, both federally here in the US, as well as with the EU Parliament and also the industry-specific organizations that are looking for regulation on artificial intelligence. So that's really our message, is we don't need to rewrite anything here. I mean, we're going to get 80% of the way by just sort of holding artificial intelligence to the same standards that we have other software. I think that when you start getting into sort of the bias and sort of ethics behind AI, it gets a little more complex. And that's a little bit more of a data problem, in my opinion, as far as how these models were trained versus a cybersecurity problem, which is how they're being used and what access they're given. But that being said, I don't think we're reinventing the wheel there at all. And that's how Hidden Layer was built. We looked at the evolution of moving to like EDR as far as, you know, the prior 30 years of cybersecurity, and then said, let's rebuild that form fit for artificial intelligence.
Interesting you mentioned regulation there. I mean, I did have a sort of a hope, probably, I don't know, 18 months ago, I guess, that with AI, things like what's happening across Europe with the EU AI Act in the UK, what's happening there, we're seeing regulation, you know, in China. You mentioned the different federated approach within the United States. I had this sort of hope that perhaps we were going to get to some point where we would have consistency of regulation across AI. And I have to say that I've become a bit of an old cynic when it comes to that now. But the point you were just making, being involved in all of this, how do you see regulation panning out? Do you think I'm wrong? Are we going to get to some sort of consistency out there? Because I really do hope I am wrong.
Unfortunately, I share your cynicism. I think we've been relatively ineffective to date in terms of the AI. Just to use here in the US as an example, we withdrew the prior administration's call to action. Now we have almost the exact same thing moving forward from the current administration. And so I would say the biggest mistake we made out of the gate was really conflating security of artificial intelligence and ethical artificial intelligence and safe artificial intelligence. I think that both are incredibly important and we really need them. I think Hidden Layer, we focus on the security side, so I can answer a little bit more about that. But that being said, like ethical AI, you know, reducing bias in AI, massively important, but you're not going to solve that with the same regulated rule set that you will on the security side. So I think the important thing that we're starting to recognize that you're seeing some shifts from folks who are doing safe AI institutions into secure AI institutions and people starting to realize, okay, these are two different responsibility sets, just like they are in every other technological asset. But that being said, I think we're starting to sort that out. And that's really going to be important for regulation because that affects things like, you know, who's responsible? Who are we going to hold accountable for these things? Is this the model builder? Is this the data that's being used to train these models? Or is this ultimately the user of the AI model? All very different as far as those things go. I think, again, to use the US as an example, I mean, we have states that are on completely different ends of the spectrum now that are pushing regulation. So I'm not very optimistic about what we're looking like there. And same thing on the EU side. I think the AI Act even has a pretty significant amount of time that they're going to allow once they do decide what's going to be required. They're offering up years for organizations to become compliant. And at the pace of artificial intelligence and how much it's advancing, what's it going to look like 2 years from now? These regulations aren't likely to continue applying at the same sort of scope. And so I think that we aren't moving quickly enough as far as regulation goes. I think that there's positives and negatives there. I mean, we don't want to be so heavy-handed with regulation that we end up slowing down innovation because to make it geopolitical for a moment, some of the other parts of the world are not going to be regulating in that same level. And, you know, certainly organizations will be competing within one way or another. So there's things in the pro column for that as well. But if you just look at data science over the last maybe 7 or 8 years, we've been building models in a pretty cavalier form. I mean, ML operations really has only existed for about 5 years. So when you start looking at things like, you know, how is this model performing? What is it doing? Even pre-generative AI, when you were just building some sort of classification model or some other predictive model, you might have a CEO come down to the data science team and say, hey, I need a model overall that's 99% accurate. Go build it. There weren't any other rules. Data scientists found things like, hey, this underrepresented group over here isn't performing as well. I better just throw that out of the data set. And all of a sudden, I'm back over 99%. But that doesn't work well when it comes to, you know, the real world application. You start to see underrepresented groups not performing as well with the models. And so I think those are all things that we've sort of identified and ironed out to some degree in other areas of tech. But in artificial intelligence, we've kind of been giving a pass just based on the fact that I don't think it was fully understood. I think that there's a lot that we can do as far as regulating things like how these models are built, what data is used in them, how well that those sets need to be used. And it doesn't have to be regulation. It can be organizations wanting to see that across performance of their own models across different, you know, classifications of data. And so there's a long way to go. But no, I would say that the regulation hasn't quite caught up in any form. And the pushing of artificial intelligence is outpacing the regulation for sure. So I don't see a sign of closing that gap either.
You made a really important point, I think, which is to try to get people to understand that it isn't a simple case of regulating AI. There are a number of different layers to it. And if we're just going to try to take this one size fits all approach to it, then we're lost before we even started. I like very much the way that you split out the security component and what needs to be done on that side, perhaps, from things like ethical use, data, and so on. So I think those are some really good starting points. I violently agree with you. Regulators have traditionally always been behind the game. You know, when you've got something like AI, which is moving at such a pace, it is impossible for most people to keep up with what is going on anyway. So from a regulatory standpoint, we probably don't stand too much chance in the short term. Somebody said to me the other day, well, why don't we just get AI to write the regulation and that'll be done?
Which it might be our best shot.
That's right. Certainly a starting point. What do you actually think, Tito, that business leaders should be doing? What steps should they be taking to really protect their organizations when the message comes down from a board? This is the way that we're going to go. We need to be using AI more aggressively to help us develop our business. You know, what are some of the things that they should be asking? Because all too often, of course, from the security standpoint, the security guy is left to pick up the pieces because the project is already underway. So it would be helpful if we could just sort of lay out some steps, I suppose, or some thoughts that business leaders might want to have before they come down with some of these brilliant ideas.
I'll break it into three categories. And I think the best way that organizations can interact there is really, again, it's not reinventing the wheel. But the first thing is the supply chain side. You know, where are these models coming from? How are our organization and how are these data scientists starting? Because most aren't building artificial intelligence from scratch anymore. They're using pre-trained models from open repositories like Hugging Face or GitHub or some of these other solutions. So question number one is, what am I bringing into my organization? And it's no different than other CI/CD pipelines. Again, you want to be able to scan code before it comes into your organization and make sure that we're leveraging things that are clean when they get here. We should continue to scan them and make sure that they're continuing to be clean and there's no insider threat issues or no part two of a longer threat action scenario. But I think number one is, what am I getting? Is it clean? Is it legitimate? Is it the model that it's purporting to be? Because that's certainly an issue out there. So let's scan that code when it comes into the organization. And then the second category would be behavioral. Who has access to these models? How are they using them? You should be logging your model inferences like you would any other activity. You should be creating an auditable log so that when there is a security incident, you can go back and answer questions like, where did this runtime issue happen? What was this inference? What was submitted to the model? Who submitted it? When did they do it? All of those issues so that you could backtrack against any sort of incident that takes place. And then, you know, that also answers some nice proactive questions for you. How are these models being used both by, you know, in the case where you have public facing chatbot on your website, we work with many organizations that are doing exactly that. They need to be able to ask that question. How are folks interacting with that model? So when it is anomalous, you know, we can jump on that a little bit more proactively, whether it's malicious or not. And then ultimately, when we do see things like somebody engaging with a model with a known attack tool or conducting known threat attempts against those solutions, you know, observing patterns that are associated with things like prompt injection, indirect prompt injection, data leakage, all of those things, you're prepared. And this organization is in a state where they can actually address it and understand what's taking place. And then lastly, I would say, understand your posture management, understand things like the roles of who can interact with the model, the way in which a engineer is using a model to write code should be pretty different from the way that someone on HR is using it to understand your workforce. So, you know, have that understanding who should be allowed to do what and control that with policy. Maybe you don't want your HR team writing code. That would make sense to me. And really, you can control that at the level of policy engaging with these models if you're using a vendor control alongside it. So I would really look at it categorically, decide what you want your organization to be allowed to do and not allowed to do and enforce it like you would any other sort of area there. And again, there's quite a bit of shift here on the AI side. It's moving pretty fast. So whatever rules you set in place are definitely going to need to be reviewed probably at a quarterly level right now to understand things like what's happening with models when I'm bringing them into my environment, when I'm fine tuning them or setting them up for some RAG infrastructure. And then the last thing I'll call out, sort of all three of those categories are going to apply to it, but every organization really needs to pay attention to their agentic strategy right now. I think if you're engaged with other enterprise organizations, as all are, everyone's building agents right now, and those agents have a lot of autonomy in order to be able to conduct transactions, in order to be able to deal with data, to be able to interact organization to organization. And I think every CISO is going to need to be able to really articulate what they want to be allowed here and not, because we're removing humans in the loop with these agents. We're allowing them to have quite a bit of agency in order to conduct these transactions at an incredible rate. So I think, again, not to sound like a broken record, but the best thing to do is take everything that you've applied to your network, take everything you've applied to your databases, take everything that you've applied to your workforce, and really hold artificial intelligence to those same standards.
Some great advice there, Tito. Thank you very much for sharing that. I imagine if anyone listening to this wants to hear more, that you're more than happy for them to reach out to you and contact you either through the website or some other way. What would be the best way for people to get hold of you if they were interested in taking it a bit further?
Yeah, the website's really convenient. You can request a demo. You can engage with us. We'll do all of those things for you. We'll help you on your AI journey. We'll ensure that you're holding AI to the same standards that you do across your cybersecurity strategy. And so, yeah, just hiddenlayer.com. It's a great way to reach out to us, and we can help you with every step of the way.
Fantastic. Tito, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing some of those really valuable insights. It's been a pleasure.
Steve, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Special thanks to this week's guest, Christopher Sestito. We'll be back next week with another new episode. In the meantime, if you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. and we'd be pleased if you'd consider sharing the episode. To become an ISF member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.